Second case for today is United States v. Wheeler. Counsel for the appellant ready? Counsel for the government?
Yes, Your Honor.
Counsel for the appellant may argue.
Good morning, Chief Judge Stuckey, members of the court. May it please the court. My name is Major Virginia Baer, and along with Lieutenant Colonel Nicholas McHugh, I represent the appellant in this case, Staff Sergeant Alexander Wheeler. Chief Judge Stuckey, may I reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal?
You may.
Article 120B, created in 2012, was intended to address all military sexual crimes against children with the exception of child pornography. It includes everything from the most severe crime of rape of a child down to a broadly defined spectrum of lewd acts. In the appellant's case, he was convicted of two charges. Charge one, alleged attempted sexual abuse of a minor under UCMJ Article 120B, and charge two, alleged a violation of 18 U.S.C. 2422B, charged under UCMJ Article 134. Charge two, the 2422B offense, was preempted by Article 120B, and all of appellant's criminal activity in this case was chargeable under Article 120B.
Counsel, may I ask you a foundational question? In McGinnis, we said when it comes to the issue of preemption, that there has to be the missing element. So it's unclear to me from your brief, when we're juxtaposing Article 120 with 2422, what is the missing element that you're pointing at?
Missing element, Your Honor, in the sense of, is it what's being removed from it?
Yes.
In some cases, potentially nothing, but in some cases, there's no element missing. It's use of a computer for sexual language to discuss sexual.
So how then does your approach mesh with the precedent of this court, where this court has explicitly stated you not only have to have the covering of the field, but you also have to have missing element? And in your brief, I could not find what missing elements you were referring to.
I would pose that the same exact conduct is charged, could be charged under both offenses with the exact same elements. Then the residuum of elements must be interpreted to mean that the act should be charged through the military offense.
But residuum, I think, in some ways was a little bit of an unfortunate word simply because it is open to some interpretation. But if we look at McGinnis, it says explicitly, the secondary question is whether the offense charge is composed of a residuum of elements of a specific offense. But it goes back to the case of Kirk, where it talks about simply deleting a vital element. So you're not arguing today that there is any vital element that is missing when we juxtapose 120 with 2422?
No, because of the broad definitions in Article 120B.
In your view, what was the purpose, the point, the rationale behind the preemption doctrine?
To maintain the criminal culpability, so that a person's culpability is not exaggerated, and also to ensure that military crimes are charged in military courts.
But wasn't the purpose really to get to the point where we're saying, this court was saying, we're not going to permit prosecutorial overreaching, where the government has a targeted accused in mind and can't prove the elements for a legitimate offense, so pulls out an element, pushes it into the general articles, and then is able to convict that targeted accused. Isn't that the real rationale behind the preemption doctrine?
It is part of the rationale, and additionally, in 2012, the UCMJ in paragraph 60C said that if conduct can be charged under a specified offense, it should be charged under a specified offense.
But how would you craft this exact same specification under Article 120B?
Well,
it's the exact same specification, what he's alleged to have done. Because it seems to me that it's different than what's listed in Article 120B.
So, of course, on the defense, I would say we just leave Charge 1 alone. Because Charge 1 says some of the language that is used to support the enticement element. Charge 1 says you can finally touch a dick. That's the kind of language that you would use to support the enticement offense. Additionally, it could have been charged as an attempted contact offense or an attempted sexual assault of a minor, depending on – there's evidence in the record to support that as well. So
– now, if the U.S. Attorney's Office had gotten involved, they would have been able to charge the service member under 2422, correct?
They would have.
What is the harm to your client with the prosecution under 2422, separate, of course, from the conviction? What is the ill that you are trying to prevent in this case and in future cases?
The ill that we're trying to prevent is to say that Article 120B is anything less than what it is, which is a comprehensive statute of child sexual crimes against children, where any indecent conduct doesn't really mean any indecent conduct. It means there's exceptions to that. So it's to prevent against prosecutorial overreaching, but also to narrow define the offense of Article 120B.
So how is it prosecutorial overreaching, though? I'd like to tease that out a little bit in terms of if the service member could have been tried and convicted by the U.S. Attorney's Office, why, when it comes down to an issue of a prosecutor at the local, state, federal, and in the military justice system levels, they have pretty much autonomy in terms of how they charge an offense. And that's not an issue for the courts to decide. Why is this a problem?
So why is it a problem that the service member could be subject to civilian jurisdiction?
No, why is this a problem that the military chose to exercise its prosecutorial discretion in charging it under 2422 rather than under 120?
Because it leads to absurd results and a misunderstanding of the definition of indecent language and indecent conduct.
So what's the absurd result? I'm sorry.
The absurd result is that intentionally communicating indecent language to a child with a broad definition of the sexual impact is defined more narrowly than that. And then the phrase any indecent conduct is rendered meaningless because it's no longer any indecent conduct.
But there isn't indecent conduct. There's an attempt to entice a child to engage in sexual activity, right? Which you can say, yes, that's indecent too, but it's something more than that. I mean, it's different. And the fact that child predators have an unlimited imagination of ways to do bad things to kids doesn't mean that Article 120B precludes things being charged by federal statute.
In this case, where an adult is reaching out to a minor, where a minor reaches out to an adult, and an alleged minor reaches out to an adult, all of the accused conduct falls under 120B. It is the indecent language, indecent conduct, and potentially an attempted sexual assault of a child. So the first piece of the question is whether Congress intended to limit prosecution for wrongful conduct to a specific article of the code. And in this case, the language of Article 120B covers all the sexual offenses against minors. It was created in 2012 with a new heading that signaled an intent to create a comprehensive statute. It is a consolidation of old crimes from Article 120 that address children, and it included chargeable offenses from Article 134, and expanded the definition of lewd act. So under the 2012 Article 120B.
Well, what about 125? What about sodomy? That's still an offense hanging out there. It's certainly an offense against minors.
This is for...
Or are we only talking about lewdness as opposed to accomplished conduct?
We're talking about sexual contact offenses, sexual assaults, and rape.
Well, you could technically, I guess, charge sodomy as sexual conduct.
Yeah.
Right? That doesn't mean it's preempted. I mean, this goes back to, I think, Judge Olson's point, which is part of preemption has to do with missing elements, matching elements, and if they're different, which
right.
They are, what's your argument?
Right, and the whole thing of the government, of not allowing the government to mix and match them so they can basically tweak the offense and get around Congress.
Go ahead.
So Article 120B does include the spectrum of contact offenses and communication contacts with children, offenses between children, and it also expands the definition to include technology. And that's really why 18.
But that's not my question.
So Article 120 does not necessarily preempt another specified offense. It does, Article 120B does.
Okay, then I misunderstood you when you got up, because I thought you said exactly that.
It encompasses.
Said it occupies the field that all sexual offenses involving children have to be charged under Article 120B. I mean, that's what you said.
It's intended to cover the broad spectrum of offenses.
Right,
yes.
But the preemption portion, the in Article 134, is addressed to precisely what Judge Olson said, isn't it? Which is, we're not going to let you take some other offense, whether it's a federal statute or it's a listed offense, and minimize the burden of proof by charging it under as a general disorder absent another element, right? So you can't, for example, charge larceny that wasn't property of another by charging it under Article 134. And you can't charge this particular offense under Article 134 if there was no enticement.
One of the uses of 18 U.S.C. 2422B is to charge sexual offenses where there's no specific intent to commit the sexual act. That was this court's holding in Shell, that you can actually remove an element of the specific intent to commit the sexual act. Article 120B did fill in the gaps in military law. It addressed the impact of technology. It no longer required that a person be in the physical presence of a child. Additionally, it's important to look at the elements of the UCMJ offense. In this case, the only element that it seems this court sees as an issue and the lower court held was that issue is the issue of this persuasion, inducement, coercion, and enticement. And case law has defined it to be more broadly than just trying to convince someone to do something. It can be done through the use of an intermediary, as this court held in U.S. v. Brooks. It can mean a willing minor. It doesn't necessarily mean changing anybody's mind. In this case, the alleged minor presented herself to the internet as someone who, in an 18 and over website, looking for sexual conduct. The offense doesn't require that somebody's mind be changed. It is broadly defined and does not necessarily require basically luring children out of their homes. This is the kind of offense that can be charged under 120B under either lewd acts as the indecent language or this broadly defined any indecent conduct.
So am I oversimplifying your argument if I say that your position is if Congress sought to occupy the field, as your position is in this instance, with all these offenses under 120, then that in and of itself is dispositive of the issue of whether the preemption doctrine should be invoked?
Not exactly, but mostly, because the elements in this case are the phrase residual embellishments has to mean that the conduct itself could be defined under the elements of a charge of a UCMJ offense. In this case, when the word any indecent conduct, when lewd acts includes any indecent conduct, that cannot mean that there is some exception that you can make to charge an offense under a different act. And that's the harm and the danger in finding that 120B does not occupy the field of child offenses.
That this could have been charged as indecent conduct?
Potentially it could have. Language can be conduct.
What do you do when it says intentionally done with or in the presence of a child, right? This wasn't done with or in the presence of a child.
Including via any, I'm sorry, when I said indecent conduct, I meant as defined in lewd acts, which says including via any communication technology. And language can be conduct.
Counsel, what if under the Article 120B, what would have been the maximum punishment under this in the facts of this case?
Your Honor, I have to check.
What was the maximum? Okay. When you on rebuttal, would you address the maximum punishment under the facts of this case under both Article 120B and under Article 134?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you. Counsel, does sentence play into the calculation of whether the preemption doctrine applies?
No, it does not, but it's certainly a policy consideration. The preemption doctrine in paragraph 60C of the UCMJ, it says that if something is chargeable under under a specified offense, not to charge it as a 134 offense.
So if 2422 had a mandatory minimum, that wouldn't be something that would be of any moment for this court?
Not under this court's definition or test for preemption. It's a consideration.
That's helpful in clarifying my question. My question is not what the maximum punishment would be if this case were tried in federal district court. The maximum punishment that I was asking about is what's the maximum punishment of charging this under Article 134 versus the maximum punishment as charging under Article 128?
I think it's 20 years or 15 years. It's 10 years for the federal statute. So maybe what you should address is how, even if this is error, it prejudices your client.
Yes, Your Honor. And I see my time is near expiring, so I will conclude until rebuttal.
Yeah, you can cover that in rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel for the government.
Chief Judge Stuckey, honorable members of the court, may it please the court. I am Major Matt Tusing, and along with Ms. Mary Ellen Payne, we represent the United States in this case. Article 120B does not include enticement crimes against children because enticement is a different class of offenses than sexual abuse. Congress never said otherwise, either through direct legislative language or express legislative history about Article 120B. And the federal enticement statute, 18 U.S.C. Section 2422, is not a residuum of elements of Article 120B.
So it's the government's position that Article 120B could not be used in this case?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And how does that fit in with the government's argument on page 176 of the record, where the government argued in sentencing that if he had succeeded in his attempt, his conduct would have been actionable under 120B, therefore an attempt was appropriate?
Well, I think the thrust of the government's argument at trial was that it was the acts of enticement was the culpable or criminal conduct, the harm that was intended to be prevented. And that's what the federal enticement statute seeks to protect. It's a different and distinct harm that it's going for. There's a difference between surveilling a child on the playground and offering a piece of candy, and I think that's what the thrust of the argument
is. And is your argument the position of the United States in this case, that is, does the Department of Defense General Counsel and does the Department of Justice take the position that Article 120B cannot reach the conduct in this case?
Thank you, Your Honor, for asking that. That is not the United States' position here today. We're speaking specifically with respect to this case, whether or not the attempt to commit an enticement by using the federal enticement statute was preempted by Article 120.
I understand that. My question is, and I'm glad we've had this dialogue clarify, is does Article 120B cover the conduct in this case? Could the conduct in this case be prosecuted under Article 120B?
Not enticement, Your Honor. The harm that that the government was seeking to protect against was the luring. And
let me ask this maybe a different way, which is, if they had wanted to, they could have crafted a different specification, right, saying he used lewd language by saying, come have meet me and have sex, or something like that.
Yes, Your Honor.
As a part of prosecutorial discretion, they decided that the offense that more nearly captured what was done was enticement.
Yes, Your Honor. I'm glad we're having this conversation. So
I'm so glad I'm here for you.
It's important to note that the government has an interest to charge every step along the way. Let's say that the appellant had committed the ultimate sexual act. Any step he took in the commission of that final act that itself was illegal, the government had an interest in charging. If you're going to attempt to rob a bank and you go out and you attempt to buy an illegal firearm, those are two separate offenses the government could charge. They could charge, Your Honor, the attempt to commit some sort of indecent sexual act in this case, but that's not what the government charged did here. What they did was they focused on the harm at issue, which is a harm that Congress understands is distinct. The enticement statute is in Chapter 117 of the Federal Criminal Code. The sexual abuse statute, the federal civilian criminal statute, is in Article 109A. Congress thinks of enticement differently, and this court does too. I mean, we look at Shell where it goes, hey, look, the luring of the children is what's at issue here. In Brooks, I mean, this court said that Congress made a clear choice to criminalize persuasion and the attempts to persuade, not the performance of the sexual acts.
Let's look at this another way. Is there anything in Article 120B that's not subject to prosecution under Title 18? That was my leading to the question, why did Congress enact it? In other words, was Congress attempting to pick and choose among federal Title 18 offenses here? Why did Congress enact this legislation? Did it cover something that could not otherwise be prosecuted under Clause 3?
No, Your Honor. I think the best way to try to figure out what Congress intended is to look at the express legislative language or the legislative history. And we have some, not a lot, but we do have some, and that's under the Senate Report, 112 Senate Report 26, where the Senate forwarded the NDAA forward and said, look, the committee recommends a provision that would amend Section 920 of Title 10 to separate Article 120 into these three separate sections. Well, the language at issue here today already existed in the previous 120. It was under Article 120J, Indecent Liberties with a Child, Indecent Acts, and there's Indecent Acts defined, and it's the very language that's at issue here. If Congress had wanted to all of a sudden have Article 120, or the section of it that's the child offenses, to now uncover enticement, they would have said so, and they said so in that Senate report when it came to, Judge Stuckey, you mentioned Article 125. Well, they specifically talk about Article 125 offenses and how now those should be considered under the Article 120. Congress threw
it all together into 120, which was a rape statute. They made a total mess of it, and then they tried to section it off. So, I mean, where are you going?
Well, if Congress had knowledge that this court agrees with the other federal jurisdiction that...
I was there at the birthing. Go ahead.
Congress would have had knowledge of Shell, of Brooks, of the military's use of the federal enticement statute under Article 134. Had they really intended for us to now use this broad indecent acts language, they would have said so in the express legislative history. It's important to note, too, that they would have also amended the direct legislative language to include that offense, and they don't. You know, we got to go back to the test in Anderson. I need to be foot-stopping that test a little bit more in this argument. In Anderson, it has to be shown that Congress intended 120B to cover a class of offenses in a complete way. It's shown through direct legislative language or express legislative history that particular actions or facts are limited to the express language of an enumerated article. It's got to be specific. And when you look at 120B, Congress didn't include any of that language. It's a lewd act upon a child, not causing a child to participate. If you look at indecent conduct, which is grossly vulgar and tends to excite, the question this court has is that indecent conduct, which is grossly vulgar?
Now, that is a hair split. It's a lewd act upon a child, not something that causes the child to do something.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And if the child manifests some action, then it ceases to be the one and becomes the other?
Well, the...
Or is it a question purely of intent? I just want to say lewd things. I'm serious. I'm asking.
Yes, Your Honor.
Because this impresses me as a real hair split.
The distinction is what the harm it's seeking, the government's interest in what the harm is that we're seeking to prevent, and that is allowing some criminal to sit in their basement in front of their computer screen and draw that child away from the protection of their family and the protection and safety of their parents. That's a very unique crime that's detailed out in enticement statute. Article 120B, the direct language, doesn't talk about it. Is the express language of 120B directly limit the enticement offenses to 120B? And the answer is no. it's not specifically limiting. The indecent conduct, which is grossly vulgar, is broad. That can include child trafficking, it includes child pornography offenses. It's broad. If Congress wanted enticement offenses to now be charged under 120B, they would have had direct legislative language that would say so, or some direct legislative history. When I turn brief,
refer to the direct legislative language. Are you aware of any language such as that in any other provision?
Not in the UCMJ, Your Honor. No. There is no language that talks about enticement in any other area of the UCMJ.
But no, I'm saying where Congress, you're saying that there should have been express language within the code, essentially, that Congress intended to occupy the field. Is there any point where Congress has said that in the UCMJ?
I guess the way that I'm taking direct legislative language, essentially inserting more of a plain language argument. I mean, we could draw a congressional intent from 120B on the legislative language by looking at the actual language that they pass and promulgate. And they could have entered enticement. They could have put in coercion, persuasion, knowing persuasion, anything like that in the definition of indecent act. Very briefly, you know, the via communications technology piece that was inserted, that didn't exist in the older version of Article 120, but it does now. And I think, you know, one could argue that via communication technology is an indoctrination of the any means of interstate or foreign commerce, like, portion of the federal enticement statute. And therefore, Congress intended anything via communication technology to include enticement. But that ignores the thrust or the gravamen of the enticement offense.
What if you write them a letter and stick a 49-cent stamp on it?
What if this court were to write Congress?
No. What if the enticer sends the enticee a letter? Is that communications technology?
Well, under the federal statute,
I mean, of course,
they specifically say mail.
Reality of commerce, so you've got a hook,
right.
But that's not what I'm asking.
It seems sort of strange to be calling this preemption. I mean, at least the preemption that I'm used to is like either you say, oh, there's really a federal question here, even though it looks like it's a state statute because there shouldn't be a state statute because Congress has occupied the field, so it's really a federal question, right? Or, no, the states can't talk about these sorts of things, ERISA. They can't have ERISA things that are contrary to the federal statute because the federal statute has to control. So how is this, like, preemption seems like a sort of imprecise term.
I would agree with you, Your Honor. I think that's why we have to look
to
Anderson.
Whole occupying the field thing, I mean, isn't the question really, as Judge Olson suggested at the beginning, is there something missing or is there some policy reason to say you can't charge this as child enticement when it's a perfectly valid federal statute and it's not clearly covered by Article 120B?
I would agree that there is no – this speaks to whether or not the enticement federal enticement statute is made up of residuum – of elements of Article 120B, and the answer to that question is no. If the government has to charge enticement, the government has to prove enticement. Under Article 120B, the government doesn't have to prove enticement. So that's why we need to keep looking to this court's decision in Anderson, where they didn't use the Clause 3 ACA interpretation. It's just you've got two statutes. Does one federal statute, does one preempt the other? And it is an imprecise. It's not the exact same type of preemption we're used to in terms of interpreting the ACA. Your Honor, that's exactly right.
Counsel, in terms of preemption, my understanding of the core of your argument is that commanders have prosecutorial discretion, and they have discretion to choose between Article 134 and an enumerated article. President, as I understand our case law, has the authority to limit the exercise of prosecutorial discretion in the manual for courts martial, in the guidance that is given in Part 4. Part 4, the express language on preemption is the preemption doctrine prohibits application of Article 134 to conduct covered by Articles 80 through 132. It's not a sophisticated elements test, it's conduct covered by. As I understand the presentation today by both parties, this conduct was covered by Article 120B, the question is which way to articulate that, whether you're using the Article 134 incorporation or Article 120B. But why doesn't the President's language in Article 134, excuse me, in the Manual for Courts Martial in paragraph 60 govern here? That is, talks about conduct covered by Articles 180 through 132.
Yes, Your Honor. So the conduct at issue here is enticement of a child, not taking some sexual act upon a child. But I think just drawing out of that, the President doesn't, I think the question remains whether, it doesn't, the President doesn't have the authority to limit Congress's intent. That's why we have to direct back to the test.
Oh, is it the government's position that the President can't exercise his authority as Commander-in-Chief to limit the manner in which cases, which types of cases can be prosecuted under the UCMJ?
No, Your Honor. If it came out that way, I certainly don't want to go on the record saying that here. What we are saying is the conduct at issue, we have to look to see whether or not that conduct exists and is intended to be covered by Article 120B. And that's not the case here. We look to
see. All about how you define what the conduct is?
Absolutely,
right?
Your Honor.
I mean, as I said before, it's like you could find some other way to charge this, but does that mean you have to?
That's really the heart of the issue, is what is the conduct? And the United States position here is the conduct as charged is distinct from what Article 120B is intended to cover, at least the indecent conduct section, and that is enticement, the luring, the attempt to draw the child out. Congress considers that a different harm. In the federal jurisdiction, you can be charged for enticement and attempting to commit the sexual act. I'd point this court to Pierce. The military has done the same thing. They charged Article 80, attempting to commit an indecent act, and Article 134, federal enticement attempt for attempting to entice.
Do you have a federal case you could cite to us that would be helpful in determining not only whether it could be charged, whether it would be run into any problems on other areas of the law in the federal courts on charging the same conduct in different statutes?
Yes, Your Honor, I can give you half of that. So in my research, I didn't find any cases where any federal jurisdiction struggled with this issue of charging enticement and attempted sexual abuse. And I apologize to this court. I did not cite this in my brief, but I will do a follow-up cite. United States v. Nagel, it's a case out of the Eastern District of Wisconsin. It's 2008 U.S. District Lexus 44914. Not a great site as far as convenience. But there's another one, United States v. Begin. It's a Third Circuit case in 2012, 696 F3D 405. Those cases... Yes, Your Honor. United States v. Begin, 696 F3D 405. It's out of the Third Circuit in 2012. Those cases revolve around the pre-sentencing report and whether or not they should have gotten certain credit, but it does go into the fact they were charged with both an attempt to commit an indecent act or the sexual act and the enticements, the federal enticement statute. So both out in the federal jurisdictions and
They were convicted of both in those cases?
They were convicted of both, yes, Your Honor. Before Congress separated old 120 into three sections, Pierce, the military, did the same thing with Article 80, attempting to commit an indecent act and attempting to entice. I think it's just important to look at where this language came from, and it came from Article 120J. And if you look at the CS's description of how they're creating 120B to broaden up this language, it's really just they specifically cite 120J. So this indecent conduct language existed before Congress, as Chief Judge Stuckey mentioned, muddled everything up and then tried to redefine it. I mean, this language was there before. We used the federal enticement statute under Article 134. And Congress would have been aware of that when they passed the NDAA, and they didn't say anything about it. If there are no further questions, may I briefly conclude?
You may.
Appellant asks this court to torture the plain language and direct language and legislative history of Article 120B. Had appellant completed the sexual act, the government would have an interest in charging all steps along the way. The test in Anderson Kick fails, and the residuum of elements test that we see in McGinnis. Therefore, appellant's request for relief should be denied.
Thank you. Rebuttal?
Your Honor, first I'll address the maximum punishment. So the maximum punishment for sexual abuse under UCMJ 120B is 20 years. The federal statute has a 10-year minimum up to the imprisonment for life, the federal 2422B statute. This remarkably multiplies a military member's criminal liability.
What did the judge say in calculating the maximum punishment in this case? Not what it is in Article III court. What was the maximum punishment calculation in this case for the Article 134 offense?
Your Honor, I do not have that in front of me. But it does. It multiplies the military member's criminal liability, which allows for any similar kind of federal or state statute regarding sexual conduct to be charged in addition to the sexual abuse statute, Article 120B. The residuum of elements in this case, the residuum of elements test in this case, is met because Congress has constructively eliminated the elements of enticement or other related crimes by broadening the definition of indecent language and indecent conduct. Indecent language can be done with a minor in their physical presence or over the computer, and for a broad range of sexual purposes. And indecent.
You don't see a difference between engaging in disgusting chat conversation with a child and asking a child to come meet you someplace to engage in sexual activity, whether they do it or not?
They're different acts. It could be charged as indecent conduct. It could be charged as an attempted sexual assault of a child. It would depend on the facts of the case. But in this case, what we have is an alleged child who presents herself to an adult website as someone looking for someone to show her the ropes. That's the facts of this case, not somebody, as the government would say, being lured away from the protection of their home and their family.
But that's what he thought he was doing.
What he thought he was doing was answering the advertisement of someone looking for an older person to commit a sexual act with. So he was engaging in indecent language, engaging in potential.
What do you do about the fact that, as I understand it at least, the UCMJ Article 120B only applies to people 16 or younger, and the federal statute applies to people 18 years or younger, right?
Your Honor, first in this case.
Am I correct about that?
Yes, Your Honor. The first question is whether the granted issue in this case is whether charge B was preempted by Article 120B. In this case, the alleged minor held herself out to be 14. So the conduct would fall under Article 120B. But additionally, it would not be a military offense.
But it's not going to be case specific. I mean, it's either preempted or it's not preempted.
It would depend actually on the state whether it's preempted, because in some states the age of consent would be might be 16. There might not be an offense.
Under federal law, it would still be an offense. It doesn't matter.
If the sexual activity that is conducted has to then be a crime, the offense of solicitation, of enticement.
I understand your point.
And then additionally, it is expanding the definition. It is expanding the elements of the offense. And that's one of the tests of preemption. So
what element of Article 120B, right, is left off by this offense?
The element of 16. In that case, the element of a child being under the age of 16. It's expanding the definition to under the age of 18, which is.
But you just said that she's 14, so what difference does it make?
Right. I'm sorry. In this case, I should have been clear. In this case, the charge was preempted. But as far as
no, but what I'm asking you is, which element of Article 120B, right, was left off, was ignored, right? How is your client worse off in terms of something that would have been criminal under 120, that would not have been criminal under Article 134, is now made criminal?
Because his his criminal liability is expanded. That's how he
works. That's not my question. My question is how is it a lesser offense? Right? They use the example in the UCMJ of you can't get rid of the element of intent for larceny, right, and charge it under Article 134. So using that same idea, how is this preempted?
Your Honor, it's preempted.
How is it made how is something that is not a crime under Article 120B made criminal by charging it under the federal statute?
Yeah. In this case, the criminal activity is chargeable under 120B. There's nothing that's accepted. Am I understanding your question correctly? That you're asking what's not chargeable under 120B?
Never mind, counsel.
The fourth point is that Congress.
You've exceeded your time.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Court thanks counsel for both sides. Case is now submitted. Court will be in recess until 09:30 tomorrow.
All rise. The court stands in recess until 09:30 tomorrow morning.